Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by our moderator, Max Grubb, and our assistant moderator, Dan Flippo, who are joining me in leading the service this morning. I'm also joined in welcoming you by our accompanist to the choir, Vanessa Vesely, and by our guest, Samantha Sinite, who you may remember from her performance here during a service a couple of months ago, and we're very delighted to have her back with us today. You can learn more about Vanessa's experience in your thread from the web today.
Love is the chalice that holds the oil. Love is the oil that feeds the wick. Love is the wick that burns with abandon. Love is the flame which dances an ancient pattern. We light the chalice of love.
To invoke love is to ask for a hug from a thunderstorm, spill tea in the lap of the infinite trickster, to make the biggest, most embarrassing mistake of your life in front of not just love, but the love that never fails. To invoke love is to know that it will come softly, with the nuzzle of a beloved dog comforting a disappointed child, or pounce right in your lap with the strength of a lioness protecting her cub, her pride, her homeland. To invoke love is to take the risk of inviting chaos into the spaces we have spent so much time making tidy, to watch as the breath of life blows the curtains and scatters everything we have just folded and put away. To invoke love is to allow for the possibility that our words and our actions might become so empowered that we no longer believe in apathy or take the self-righteous path of believing that we are impotent or that nothing can change. To invoke love is to give up our self-deprecation, our false humility, and consider ourselves worthy to be made whole, worthy and willing to speak those words of bravest fire, to be the voice of love and justice in this wounded world. To invoke love is to turn an ordinary Sunday morning into a time and a place where we surrender our egos into the hands of love, ready to be transformed, empowered, and inspired to do what only love can do. To invoke love is to guard against the assumptions, to take care with our words, to practice forgiveness, not as some ethereal ideal, but right here in the messy midst of this gathering made up of us, imperfect as we all are. To invoke love is to allow ourselves to approach this day and every person that we encounter with wonder, anticipating love's arrival. Is this the moment? Are you love's arrival? Is that person the embodiment of love? Am I the one? To invoke love is to play the fool, the one more concerned with loving than with appearances or reputation, the one who is ready and willing to be vulnerable, to abandon anything that gets in love's way, the one who has chosen love over fear. To invoke love is to become ready to become love, right here, right now, in everything we do. Are you ready? Come, let us worship together. Max and Dan and I have recently returned from the Unitarian Universalist Association General Assembly. That's the annual meeting of the congregations of the association, attended by representatives from all of the congregations. And the gathering this year was almost 5,000 people, held in Providence, Rhode Island. All of the words that are not our own today, we bring to you as gifts from the worship services at that General Assembly. The theme this year for the General Assembly was Love Reaches Out. That means a lot of different things. One of the things that it means is reaching out to help heal our world. And each of us struggles to do that in our own way, taking different shape in different seasons of our lives. It can be confusing and sometimes dispiriting to try to be a person who helps heal the world. And so I bring you this morning wisdom words for any of you who have ever risked trying to help heal the world. Beatitudes for justice builders. Blessed are you who can question your own assumptions and listen with an open mind. You will receive new insights beyond your imagining. Blessed are you who build friendships as well as justice. Even when you lose an issue, you will be strengthened by the foundation of your community. Blessed are you who take delight in people. You will not be bored in meetings. Blessed are you who agitate the placid waters of complacency. You will create waves in the inertia of privilege, and you will know the thrill of riding the surf of change. Blessed are you who lead with confidence and enthusiasm, resisting the temptation to shame the apathetic or self-absorbed. You will inspire curiosity and hope in others. Blessed are you who play as well as work. You will have more fun, build more energy, and will draw others to your cause. Blessed are you who ask for help in your role as leaders. You will find teachers at every turn, and your work will remain interesting and alive. Blessed are you who do not demonize your opponents. Your eyes and your hearts will be open. Blessed are you who sing and dance. You will find energy and joy to lift you in your work. Blessed are you who offer thanks and praise fivefold for every critique. Your children will want to visit you after they are grown. People will want to serve on your committees, and friends will be interested in your opinions. Blessed are you who study the rhythms of history. You will have knowledge with which to shape the future. Blessed are you who work in coalition rather than in principled isolation. You will meet great people, learn great things, and learn things that you didn't realize you needed to know. Blessed are you who discover, train, and encourage young leaders. You will see your work expand and grow beyond your own time and talent. Blessed are you who change your mind. You are still alive. Blessed are you who will not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You will see progress in your lifetime. Blessed are you with an active spiritual life. You will find perspective and comfort in times of loss and betrayal, and will rise without cynicism to meet the challenges of a new day. Blessed are you who live from a place of gratitude, for you will know the meaning of life. We'll keep silence for a few moments together. The baby sits on the floor playing with a toy, while the mother folds laundry and rehearses some list or plan or another in her head. And then a little gust of breeze comes into the room and swirls the dust on the floor, attracting the baby's attention. He sees it dancing in a shaft of light, light which comes streaming through the window straight to him. He abandons the toy and reaches out. For several minutes, he studies the light, trying to grasp it in his fist. Thank you, Spirit of Life, for this ordinary reminder. There is no way to grasp the light. The only thing we can do is unclench the fist, open the hand, and let the light wash over us. In this way, we will receive the light of love. And in this way, we will be reminded of the truth that no one owns that light. It shines on us. It shines on everyone. May we be open. May we be willing to praise the light to praise the light of love and recognize it as a great gift for each and every one of us. Amen, and blessed be.
Good morning. When asked to reflect on my recent Unitarian Universalist General Assembly experience, I thought of that classic MasterCard marketing campaign. And here's what my life been like the last 30 days. Becoming Kent UU moderator. Apprehensive. Sharing a hotel room for 5 days with the assistant moderator. At UUA, GA, and bringing earplugs. Wonderful. Joining over 4,700 individuals in community at UUA, GA. Inspirational, and yes, priceless. This was my first experience with a major UU event. I have not attended a district UU assembly meeting, or, for that matter, Summer Institute. I know. Hopefully next year. We're planning on it. As a child, I grew up a fundamental Baptist and in a fundamental Baptist environment. My only experience with extraordinary religious gatherings involved an evangelism based on hell, fire, and brimstone, with saving people for God as the goal. So, when I arrived in Providence, Rhode Island, to attend and serve as a delegate to this year's UUGA, I had no idea what to expect. It felt somewhat like when I was approached a year ago to serve as assistant moderator, not knowing where that would lead. Thanks, Elaine. But from the moment I checked in at the registration desk, got my credentials, and reviewed the program, I knew I was in for something totally new, a whole new experience. With this year's theme, Love Reaches Out, I experienced on a grand scale what it means to live in covenant community. For 5 days, I attended panels, services, and spoke with various UUs from across the nation, all of which served to remind me of the paths that we as UUs have chosen. It wasn't just one message or issue that impressed me while attending GA. There were many that were discussed and acted on. It was being with over 4,700 UUs that not just talked about the UU mission, vision, principles, or values, but live it. It was becoming increasingly aware that our UU community does not just involve engaging our members, but reaching out and engaging the communities that surround us. It was acknowledging that if we as UUs are to live our values, we must reach out, connect, and engage with other communities. The UUWare lecturer, Sister Simone Campbell, National Coordinator of Network, a national Catholic social justice lobby, challenged us to walk toward our community and away from the unpatriotic lie of individualism, that we need to reach out and have conversations about our values, that living our values means putting ourselves out there on the front lines where inequality exists and injustice calls us. We do this by reaching out with love. This is the one message from UUA GA that I feel, among others, that I want to share. Thank you.
So as we've been saying, the theme this year was Love Reaches Out. And I have to admit that this is a topic that I was particularly interested in. For those of you who don't know my story, I discovered Unitarian Universalism only a few years ago when my younger sister was exploring options for her own wedding. I like to think that I was relatively informed on world religions, but I was, and sometimes still am, shocked to find out that liberal religious communities have existed near every town I have ever lived in. Love Reaches Out calls all of us to engage outside the walls of our congregations to spread the word of our movement.
Now, those of you who grew up in an evangelical church might have a certain reluctance to spreading the word, but we need to get past that in order to fulfill our mission. Now, later this year, I'm going to be organizing an effort to reword our mission statement, but I'm going to try to put it in my own words. As UU, we are called to create covenanted communities that allow us to live meaningful lives in service to ourselves, our communities, and our world. This is not a calling that we can each do on our own. Many of the sessions that I attended at GA discussed the best methods to reach out to spread our UU messages online. Much of my own ministry for our congregation has been to work with a small team to create and maintain our website. When my younger sister called me and asked if I had ever heard of Unitarian Universalism, our website was my very first impression of our congregation. I believe I offered to replace that website less than a month after attending my first service. More importantly, I've reached out beyond our congregation to publish a WordPress theme called UU 2014, which allows any UU congregation to create a simple website that works on both computers and mobile devices and is accessible to those who need keyboard navigation or use a screen reader. There are now many UU congregations throughout the country that use this theme, and it was promoted in many of the GA sessions. Ironically, I actually know of 5 Christian churches, including 2 Southern Baptist churches, that now have chalices at the top of their website because they're using the theme and they don't realize that the flaming chalice is the symbol of UU. To further help UU organizations reach out online, I also have a website, uuwp.org, where anyone can create their own UU WordPress website in a few clicks. And I'm teaching a morning seminar this week at SI titled Church 2.0 on how congregations and individuals can reach out online through social media and WordPress. Now, I'm sometimes embarrassed a bit about my enthusiasm for our movement, but a little less so after hearing Reverend Mark Stringer in the Sunday service. He told his own story of how he found Unitarian Universalism at age 29. He said, "I had spent most of the previous decade avoiding religion. I still had held many of the values I had received growing up in Christian congregations, the importance of loving my neighbor, the need for compassion, the necessity of forgiveness. But I had come to see that ideas about God, held too tightly, were often divisive and sometimes dangerous. Could there be a religion that would leave space for believers and non-believers alike, a religion that would leave space for me? I found that space in my first UU congregation, the Community Church of New York. I remember my first Sunday there, how moved I was by the banners representing world's religions hanging throughout the sanctuary, and how delighted I was by the evidence in the hymnal that theological diversity was welcomed. Universalism, Unitarian Universalism clicked with me. It clicked because I knew I had the freedom to believe not on someone else's terms and with their terms, but on my own and with my own. And I knew that others had the same opportunity, and it was better for all of us that we were doing it together. A year after walking into community church, I enrolled at Meadville Lombard Theological School. We tell ourselves to be a religion for our time, but mostly we play small. We self-deprecate and make excuses for ourselves. We're just a tiny religion, we say, as if that's all we're called to be, satisfied with welcoming for just a few new members a year. We shrink from taking risks, fearing that not everyone will agree with everything that we say, as if anything that has ever received universal agreement. We quibble over logos and buildings and which names for the holy belong in our services and which names don't. And our greatest stumbling block, we say we promote religious freedom, yet too often we don't want to be in the company of people practicing faiths other than our own. Now, I don't have any plans to attend theological school, but I relay his story because I think it reinforces both why we should reach out and what is holding us back. If we are afraid of engaging with those who might not agree with us, then we will fail to achieve the mission I mentioned earlier, to create covenanted communities that allow us to live meaningful lives in service to ourselves, our communities, and our world. Thank you.
For the last several years, my attendance at the General Assembly has been utterly exhausting. I am involved in a number of leadership positions in Unitarian Universalist organizations that have responsibilities at the General Assembly, and the schedule has been quite demanding. So I decided that with a new baby in our lives, this would be a good year for me to rein it in a little bit and be a little less busy. This morning I report to you that I did not succeed. So who knows why something just reaches in and grabs our hearts? I don't know, but I can tell you that the struggle for immigration justice has reached in and grabbed mine. If you have been around this congregation for a while, you know that a few years ago, I decided, in response to a call from Unitarian Universalist leaders working on immigration justice, that I was going to get involved in this struggle. And I went to Phoenix, Arizona, after that state passed a set of controversial new laws, shorthand SB 1070, Senate Bill 1070, which targeted people with dark skin who law enforcement might suspect to be undocumented immigrants, and was an effort stated by the state in order to encourage undocumented immigrants to leave Arizona lest they be threatened with deportation. So I decided that I was going to respond to that call, and I went and participated in the National Day of Noncompliance and engaged in civil disobedience there and was transformed by that experience, and I came home with stories and experiences that I shared with you, and I hoped that together we might create an immigration justice ministry here in this congregation. It didn't quite take hold. Who knows why something reaches out and grabs the heart of a congregation? I don't know, but I do know that this congregation has been more drawn toward environmental justice work and to issues of hunger and homelessness. And those are important to me too, so I have focused my energies there. But then this story broke in the United States about the thousands of undocumented children on our border, and my heart was broken all over again, and I told you about that a few weeks ago in a Sunday service. And after that service, Dan said to me, you know, that issue would make a good action of immediate witness at the General Assembly. An action of immediate witness is a statement that the delegates to the assembly review in a collective business meeting of thousands of people and have an opportunity to determine whether or not they would like to adopt through a process that takes several days. Now, my first thought when Dan suggested that was, yeah, that would be good, but I don't want to do it. So I decided, though, that I would at least reach out to some other immigration justice leaders and hope that someone else was going to say, oh, yeah, we're planning on that. And I would say, okay, I'll be glad to help a little bit. So I did reach out, and I talked to a few leaders, and they all said, yes, that would be great. That would be really important. Will you lead it? So I did. And I was very gratified that the General Assembly was moved by this, by the testimony, by the statements, and decided to adopt this action of immediate witness. But I realized that in deciding to lead the effort, that I would need to follow through on what we were calling for. And the immigration leaders in Unitarian Universalism told me the thing to call for would be for people to attend an upcoming faith summit on stopping deportation held in Washington, D.C. at the end of the month. Part of the reason that I hesitated in agreeing to lead this effort is that I knew that if I led it, that I would have to go to this event in D.C. You can't lead something and say, oh, but I'm too busy. So that was my first thought, I'm too busy. My second thought was, there's been too much travel in my life. My third thought was, I really don't like being in the spotlight. And my fourth thought was, surely there's someone else who would like to do this. And then I thought about it some more, and I thought about the feelings of hopelessness and helplessness that I have had. And I thought, you know, action is an excellent antidote to feelings of hopelessness and helplessness. So I talked to my spouse, and we agreed, we'll go to D.C. So we're going at the end of the month, and I'm hoping that some of you might come with me. There are roles for people who want to be supporters, witnesses, and there are roles for people who are willing to commit civil disobedience. This event is being organized by a broad coalition of faiths. It's being led by the Unitarian Universalists and the Methodists. The Methodists were the ones who kind of spearheaded this, and other faith groups have gotten involved. Disciples of Christ will be there, the United Church of Christ, Mennonites. There will be many faith leaders from many religious traditions. And in addition, there will be immigration justice leaders from a variety of secular organizations participating. The idea behind this witness event is that President Obama has said that he's prepared to take executive action in light of Congress's failure to act on immigration reform. And our request will be that he stop the deportations. Every day in the United States, over 1,100 people are deported. In the last 5 years, more than 2 million people have been deported. Every deportation fractures a family. Every deportation causes breaks in community. And I am particularly concerned that the children, many of whom should qualify for refugee status but do not have access to attorneys, will be deported. And so I will be participating. And because my spouse shares this calling, one of us will participate in the civil disobedience. We haven't quite figured out which one of us will do that and which one of us will care for our child, but one of us will participate. And so I want you to know that ahead of time. The civil disobedience plan is to take place right in front of the White House, and faith leaders from all of these traditions are being asked to kneel together in front of the White House and pray for relief. That's the name of the event. Pray for relief from deportation. And we expect, this will all be arranged ahead of time, that the Washington, D.C. police that guard the White House area will then arrest the faith leaders, and we will be processed. In D.C., unlike in Arizona, they are accustomed to people participating in moral civil disobedience. So the process is something that they have a lot of experience with, and we expect it will be fairly streamlined. They tell us that from arrest to release, it will probably be 12 hours or less, and we will be fined and will not need to return for any further court proceedings. So that is what's happening. That is what happened to me at General Assembly. That's the story that I bring back to you. I also bring back to you some theology that helps me make sense of all of this. The theology comes from Sister Simone Campbell, who Max mentioned, a Catholic nun. She spoke to us in a lecture, and she told us that to be a person of faith means to walk towards trouble. To be a person of faith means to walk towards trouble. That resonates with me. There's a whole host of trouble in this world. And part of the reason that I was drawn to religious community in the first place, I didn't grow up in religious community. Part of the reason that I was drawn to religious community in the first place is because I want deep in me to be a part of helping heal the trouble in the world. Now, of course, there are lots of organizations that walk towards trouble. Lots of secular organizations do that too. The reason I ground my work in religious community is because I'm convinced that being a part of this, being a part of a worshiping community, will help me nurture my own spirit so that I don't burn up or burn out in the efforts that call my heart. I need to be regularly reminded, not just of the troubles of the world, but also of the joys of the world, the reasons for gratitude, the cause we have for celebration, because it's all bound up together. So that's why I do this work in religious community. And the reason why I do it in Unitarian Universalism is because here in this faith tradition, I have found the theology, the principles, the values, and the vision that resonate with my own. There's no other religious tradition that would truly fit for me. And Sister Simone, a Catholic, helped me clarify that once again for myself. Her testimony reminded me of the theological grounding and justice work that I have found in Unitarian Universalism, but what I found most inspiring and helpful in her lecture was the link that she made between trouble and uncertainty. The link between trouble and uncertainty. Holy faith, she says, lives hand in hand with holy doubt. She says we need to let ourselves be disturbed by uncertainty, and then, despite our uncertainty, keep walking towards trouble and let ourselves be open to what we find. I find this frame so very liberating. For me, it means that I don't need to feel like I have it all figured out. And that's a relief. Those of you who work closely with me in this congregation know that I can sometimes be visited by a little streak of perfectionism. The problem, of course, is that nothing is ever perfect. Nothing is ever perfect. Sister Simone's lecture reminded me how important it is for me to try to quiet that impulse in myself when it rises. Shh, it's okay. Nothing's ever perfect. Not only is that helpful, it actually gets unhelpful. It actually gets in the way of being open to the complexity of my life, of your life, of our lives. Because lives don't always perfectly add up into an elegant little equation. In fact, sometimes they don't even add up at all. There are puzzles so complex that we just sit there staring at them. How can we make this add up? We don't know. But it's okay. It's okay to be uncertain about the answers. Walk towards trouble anyway. Choose to act on imperfect knowledge and listen for more truth, more voices, more stories, and a fuller understanding on the journey. Sister Simone's theology is grounded in a faithful humility, and I'm inspired by her example. Love reaches out. I've been telling you this past month how love is calling me to reach out. How about you? How is love calling you? It's an open question, and I invite you to add it to your prayer practice or your meditation practice, or just stick it in the back of your mind and let it mull around. How is love calling you? If you're hurting, troubled in body or spirit, wounded or weary, maybe love is calling you actually to reach in. If love needs you to grieve or to rest or to tend the wounds in your own life, walk towards that trouble in your own heart. There's no shame in that. Let love reach into your life and lift you up, keep you company, call you into community. Let love wrap you up if that's what you need. And if you're in a place where you have a little extra to give and you can be a part of love reaching out, let love call you to the place that you need to go. Only you know where that is. Maybe love is calling you to reach out to a friend or a family member or to a person in your community. If you weren't here last Sunday, I encourage you to listen to the podcast of that service. It was a beautiful service with powerful examples, concrete examples of what it means to reach out in love to the people in your community. It was a beautiful service. I learned something new and was moved by the testimony of the speakers. Love reaches out to friend, family member. Love reaches out in community. Love reaches out. How is love calling you? Maybe love's calling you to reach out beyond your circle of family, friends, and community, out into the larger community, this world that we share. Maybe love is calling you to figure out what you can do to bring a little more peace and justice into this world. So listen for the calling of love in your life and let it guide you. It might not be 100% clear. It might not make a perfect equation, and that's okay. Holy doubt is essential to faith, so let love guide you where love needs you to go. And where is that, you wonder? Truly, the answer is everywhere. Love needs to go everywhere. So wherever it is that love is calling you, have confidence because you can trust that call. Amen, and blessed be. Go as you go this day with open minds, open hands, open hearts. Let yourselves be an instrument of love. Go in peace.